This is the first in a series of short podcasts by A&O Consulting to help financial services regulated firms. In this series, we're going to cover topics around conduct and non-financial risk. Today, the focus is on non-financial risk. My name is Sally Dewar. I'm the CEO of A&O Consulting. And with me today, I have Lee Allam, who heads up our APAC business. So Lee, why don't we start with this concept of what is non-financial risk and why does it matter? Specifically, what is conduct risk?
Thanks, Sally. I would define non-financial risk management as including compliance, operational risk, and conduct risk, and also including traditional legal risk. I think the issue with non-financial risk management has that it has received a lot less focus and has been quite less well-defined than its financial risk management cousin. I think that has started to change and probably started post-credit crisis, but I would say it is still relatively immature. Compliance, operational risk, and conduct risk all do have some crossover, in my view, and sometimes that can give the or bring rise to the idea that we should just have one type of non-financial risk stripe, but I think the lens applied in each of those can be very different.
So perhaps it would be helpful then if you took us through each of those definitions in turn, just to bring it to life a bit for us.
Sure. I would typically define operational risk as the risk of loss resulting from inadequate or failed internal processes, people, and systems, or from external events. If you were to turn that into a question, I would say the question is, what is the likely financial loss associated with operational failures, and do we mitigate the risks and hold enough capital against those risks? Compliance, on the other hand, is the risk of sanctions, financial loss, or loss to reputation as a result of failing to comply with laws, regulations, rules, and codes of conduct. Often this is referred to as the can we question. Conduct risk, finally, is the risk of inappropriate, unethical, or unlawful behavior. And this inner question is often referred to as the should we question. It goes beyond the law and regulations. It takes account of concepts such as good or fair customer outcomes and the importance of maintaining market integrity. I think, Sally, it also is a discipline that strives much more to focus on the drivers of individual and organizational behavior. And those drivers would be things such as culture, incentives, consequences management, tone from the top, training, and so forth.
So just to bring that to life again a bit further, if we were to take an example as, say, a fat finger error, then potentially there is an operational risk issue there. A mistake has been made, a control has been breached. There's a potential for it to have been a compliance risk issue. Was a process not followed, a procedure, a framework question? And then layered on top of that is this concept of a conduct risk breach. Was there a deliberate attempt made to damage the firm or the market? Did the individual benefit from that breach at all? Would that be a way of thinking about it?
I think that's right, Sally. I'd also add that from a conduct risk perspective, you would also consider that even if the individual was not acting in an unethical way, you would also look at the environment that the organization has created around that individual to see, did they contribute to driving that error? Whether through their incentive structures, the pressure they've applied on the individual, and other characteristics of conduct that we look at.
So let's move on to sort of post-financial crisis then. What has changed in terms of the focus on non-financial risk management?
I think, Sally, it's certainly accelerated and has become a much more important part of governance, and it's certainly much more in our lexicon now across many developed jurisdictions, such as the UK, Australia, US, and so forth. The main driver of that has certainly been the consequences applied, whether it has been in the cases of AML violations, sanctions breaches, LIBOR misconduct. And I think that that has really made firms start to seriously think about the impact of not managing non-financial risk appropriately. Going forward, Sally, I would also say that I think the community and regulators fulfilling community expectations will have much less tolerance for failings going forward. So even today, Sally, despite those significant fines and reputational damage, I don't think all firms fully appreciate the importance of non-financial risk management. And even if they do, I don't think many board and executive members would say they know how to properly manage it. You have a lot of experience in this area. What would you say?
So I agree. And I think regulatory focus pushes the drive onto boards and pushes it into the executive management committees much more, but still a lot needs to be done. And a further challenge that exists is also recognizing the link between conduct, those behaviors, and the outputs of those behaviors and the metrics that are gathered, and how that influences or gives a perception of the culture of the firm. And those conduct metrics can be hugely helpful as indicators of emerging cultural themes, and can therefore help boards and executives really frame the work they need to do to drive those conduct behaviours, reinforce training, changes to policies and procedures going forward. So the two are really inextricably linked and need to be thought of in that way.
Yeah, thank you. And Sally, maybe my last point on this topic would be that ASIC recently, probably a couple of months ago now, published a thematic review into corporate governance, focused in on non-financial risk management. And they concluded that even today, non-financial risk management significantly lags behind non-financial risk management. And examples given were that the risk appetite statement was consistently breached and not all firms took action to remedy that. And in addition, management information was very varied. Risks and issues weren't brought to the forefront. Metrics and others were certainly less mature than what you would see for financial risk management.
So that was a really interesting review, thanks, Lee, and very consistent with what we've seen in the UK over recent years. And I think the focus around some of these issues will continue for the foreseeable future. So that brings us to the end of our first podcast. We hope that you'll tune in next time for our second one, which looks at financial performance and conduct and how to strike the right balance between the two.